And welcome back to another episode of The Conspiracy Skeptic. I'm your Conspiracy Skeptic, Carl Maymer. And with me is returning guest, Karen Stolznose. Karen, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, thanks, Carl. Thank you for having me back on the show. And how are you doing?
Not bad. Little ups, little downs.
Big ups, big downs.
Yeah, strange thing growing on my hand now. I can't figure out.
Isn't it a bummer getting older? Just all the little things that start cropping up and big things.
I know it's endless, but we're doing not too bad. So now the last time I had you on was March 2024, and you were talking about your book.
Misconceptions.
Thank you. Impotence. Misconceptions. Right. Yes.
that's another story. That's okay. A different book, I think.
It's part two. Yes. All right. Yeah. Now I'm going to get you to say this word, and then I want you to give me permission to use the word during the course of this interview, if that's okay.
This is the first time I've ever had anything like this. So okay. I'm assuming the word is bitch. So yes. My book is Bitch, the Journey of a Word. And I really appreciate the nicety. I certainly don't have to give you permission to use it, but I think everyone uses it. Everyone has used it. Everyone has had it used against them in one way or another. So the word is out there, and I'm not policing it as such, but I'm just presenting the word and everything that it is.
Great, yeah. Because I mean, my message is to you. I'm like, hey, Karen, do you want to come on my podcast and talk about your B word book? And I keep calling it the B word book because it is a very even my wife, I'm like, oh, I'm interviewing Karen. We're doing, we're going to talk about her B word book. So,
well, that's the thing. I think there's a very long tradition of the word being censored in speech and in writing. And at the same time, it is everywhere. It's an omnipresent word. It's everywhere to be found on the streets, on the internet. It's being used all the time. And it has many different faces. Great. That's for sure.
Now this is your book came out fairly recently, right?
Well, it came out last year.
Oh, okay.
However, but this it's trickier than that because it came out through Cambridge University Press, and they suffered a cyber attack right when the book was being released. So I must be carrying a curse around with me, I think, because the last time that I published with them, COVID hit. So
yes.
Every time I release something, there's some kind of event that affects everything. But so when the book was released, I just wasn't hearing anything from the publisher. And I thought, this isn't good. No promotion, no marketing, nothing from editors. Just no one was responding to emails and nothing was being advertised or said about the book at all. And so I was concerned.
Yeah.
And then
not a good
it emerged.
Sign.
Not a good sign. No, it's already a troublesome thing with distribution and marketing with publishers nowadays anyway. But so I finally heard back from them and they said, yes, we've suffered a cyber attack and it must have been very severe because they were out of commission for months and authors weren't receiving their royalties and books weren't being published. So it really delayed things. So it's interesting because I think the promotion for this book has really ramped up this year. Mm-hmm. And I would like to think that the book has enduring interest for people. There are other books similar to this one, and I think that they've stood the test of time like the word has. So I'm hoping that there'll be continued interest in the book, even though it was published last year.
All right. Now, what prompted you to – I mean, your last book was kind of a bit of a about your own journey, but what prompted you to write this book called Bitch? Sorry.
Well, there you said it. Well done. So I think, look, there were lots of prompts really for this book. So the previous book, as you said, Misconceptions, that was more of a memoir. Mm-hmm. So – we could say in some regards that Bitch perhaps could be a memoir in terms of experiences as well. So I think there were really lots of reasons why I wrote the book. I think that it's such a provocative word. It's so powerful. There is just so much to it. There's a lot of interest in the word. There are precedents with books like Jesse Scheidlauer's The F Word. So I was inspired by that. And I have this long tradition too of long history of writing about rude words. So insults and slurs and discriminatory language prejudice. I have a previous book on the offensive about prejudice in language past and present. So I really have been writing about this kind of thing for decades. And I think there's just lots of kind of key things that led to the writing of this book. And I was approached by one publisher and they wanted to commission a book. And they said, can you think of a small volume that you could write that is maybe a couple of thousand words about one word? And linguists do this kind of stuff all the time. They will spend years researching a particular word, maybe a cultural key term or something like that from a language that maybe hasn't been described or is different in some way, and then they'll write a PhD thesis dissertation on that. So this kind of thing isn't unheard of. But I thought, well, what would be an interesting word? And I thought of a word like cool. Mm-hmm. It's got a really cool history and past and so many elements and layers to the word. But then it struck me, well, maybe an insult of some kind, a slur. Mm. And so bitch really leapt right. out at me as being right. an interesting word. And so anyway, that particular project failed, not because of interest, but because that person moved on to a different publisher. Mm-hmm. So I went to Cambridge University Press because I published through them before. And they said, oh, yes, do you think you could expand on this book to maybe 30,000 words? And I thought, oh, I don't know if I could do that, 30,000 words on one word. And then when it came to contract time, it had to go through the peer review process because this is an academic trade yeah. book. So it really straddles that line of being scholarly and rigorous when it comes to research, but also trying to be of interest to the general public. And they, when contract time came, they wanted me to do 65,000 words to 75,000 words. So I was very overwhelmed, but it happened. And the more I dug into the topic, the more I discovered, and there was just so much to unpack right. with this word. So, again, talking about reasons why I wrote the book, I think that I mentioned earlier that we've all had the word used against us. I've had the word used against me by people that I love and people I'm close to, and it can be so hurtful,
yeah.
depending on the context, and just a very impactful word. And so I think this was really, I guess, a big response to anyone who's ever used the word or had it used against them. This really unpacks the word and all of the different senses and meanings and connotations and just kind of a deep dive into this word and its history and its present.
Wow. You know, as kind of women really came into skepticism, one thing I know is this interesting double standard where like a man, think of like Randy, would always be described as a curmudgeon, right?
Right.
Whereas a woman in skepticism, I won't name any names, but, would immediately get labeled who just is, as expulsive as Randy would get immediately labeled a bitch, right? There's this,
A double standard.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I mean, what are kind of some of the double standards with sorry, I can't say the word again, bitch. Sorry, this is a problem interviewing with a Canadian.
you're too polite.
Okay, keep saying sorry.
You are free to use the word as much as you would like. Okay. And again, it's very contextual. And right. In this context, it's really more clinical if we're talking about it from a linguistic perspective. But yes, there are double standards with the way that the word's used. So it's used differently toward women than it's used toward men. So we can delve into the history a little bit more at any point. But the word has been, it's been around for 1,000 years or more than 1,000 years. So it goes back to Old English, was originally spelt a little bit differently. It's right. looked a bit different. Typically, one of the spellings, one of the main spellings was B-I-C-K. C-C-E. So it was pronounced, we believe, biche.
Okay.
Something like that. And so it was originally a literal term for a female dog. And so it's the word is attested. So that means we have examples of the word or evidence of the word in manuscripts and all different kinds of documents. Mm. A lot of them refer to kind of folkloric medicine. Mm-hmm. So we have examples of bitch's urine or bitch's milk that is used in to cure corns and warts and things like that, and also for teething problems in babies. So those are the earliest uses that we have. But pretty much around that time, it was already being used as a slur against women. And right around that time, too, it became used as an insult toward men. So it has this long history. And I think it's because of the nature of the word. A word like dog, which is it's right. obviously related to, bitch is a specific type of dog, that insult goes back to ancient times. So we have examples from ancient Rome and ancient Greece of dog being used as an insult in writings by philosophers and authors like Homer. So it was natural that bitch was going to be used as an insult, particularly because it references women.
Right.
But
you, I was going to say,
go ahead.
I'm just interested. What is how? I mean, other than like son of a bitch, which can also kind of sometimes be also like a compliment. Like, you know, you're one
tough son of a bitch. Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. Right. So, you know, calling someone a son of a bitch could be an insult. Although I guess ultimately also does, you know, it's a negative towards women still, but you know.
Yeah, it still kind of comes back on women for sure.
Yeah, yeah. How dare, you know, it's the refrigerator mom thing, you know. You're not taking Tylenol, you know. You bitches are having sons or something, I don't know.
Yeah, and I do go into that phrase a lot in the book, and so it was a very popular insult going back about 150 years ago in the UK, and then it came over to North America and was probably one of the favorite insults here, maybe until the 1950s, then it really kind of lost its bite and it just wasn't deemed to be as offensive. So it really does have that hedging or that softening, because you're not saying bitch outrightly, you're saying son of a bitch. And again, it does refer back to women. Right. But further to what I was saying, that the word is used in different ways. So when it's used in reference to a woman, it can mean lots of different things. If we go back to the 1960s, then we're talking about the way that it was used in the during the second wave of feminism by authors like Jo Freeman in the Bitch Manifesto, and she talks about a bitch being a powerful woman, being a confident woman, a woman that's not to be messed with. And so we do have that use that's around today, and it's wielded by as a self-identifying label for a lot of women, from Yoko Ono through to, Madonna. Lots of women have used it and said, well, I'm a bitch in terms of a powerful woman.
Right.
But if we go back further in time, it was really used in a slightly different way. So it was used in reference to whores. So much like a harlot or a modern day slut. So slut has a really interesting history, because we think about that as being a promiscuous woman. Right. But that usage only really goes back to the 1960s. And I remember my father, when he was still alive, talking about sluts as messy, untidy women. And I'm like, Dad, you can't use it that way. And, oh, it's just a slovenly woman. No, it doesn't mean that anymore. So I think that that was a good demonstration to me that the word had evolved and changed over time. And so, yeah, so slut, again, I do delve into that more in the book if people want to find out more about that. But slut originally referred to maybe a maidservant or someone who kept the house. So I've got examples from works like Samuel Pepys's diary, and he talks about having a new slut and how pleased he and his wife were with this maidservant, this new slut that they had. So it doesn't hold well today, but certainly early uses of bitch were referring to more modern sluts, so promiscuous women, whores and harlots, and then over time became used in reference to an annoying woman. So a woman who is nagging, is irritating, and then to the way that we use the word today, it can be used as a slur against a woman that you like for any reason. A woman's a bitch just because. You don't like her for whatever reason, and so it's a very dismissive, generalized insult for women. But it says something different when it's used toward men. It's basically a reference to them not doing a good job of being a man, is how I put it in the book.
Oh, yeah,
and that is that it's a man who's a little bitch or a prison bitch. It's a submissive man. It's a weak man. It's a man who isn't very masculine. It's that's that kind of double standard, the way that it's being used. But it, again, can be good to be a son of a bitch. Under the right circumstances.
Yes.
And we have examples of Harry S. Truman being called a son of a bitch, and just that those connotations that a son of a bitch is someone who's strong and tough and they're going to tell it like it is kind of thing. But a woman who's a bitch, again, you have that the two sides of the coin. It can be a positive, it can be a negative, and it really depends on the context. So what is the context of the word? How is it being said? What is meant by it? How is it received? All of these factors come into the way that the word is, the meaning of the word and how it's interpreted.
Right. And, of course, bitchin', I think of bitchin' Camaro by the Dead Milkman. You know, bitchin' is
something great.
it's great, right? You know, it's like, you know, oh, man, that thing's, that's bitchin', you know. You want to go... Yeah. Want to go here? What a bitchin' idea, you know?
And that term, we've got lots of examples of that. Maybe going back to California and surfers in the maybe the 60s, 70s, 80s, but that was a positive word, still is. And we see that with other words too, like bad and cool, nasty, and how they can be used in bad ways, negative ways, but they've kind of ameliorated too in some usage and can be used as positive. And again, you've got to think about the context to see what's being meant.
Yeah. I, as a former ESL teacher, what do you call that? Not a metaphor? I'd be teaching English at one point, but
it's a difficult word to teach. And I do have an entire section of the book right towards the end where I talk about future directions of the word and what could it mean in future and how is it used in other countries. And it really has a interesting history and present in that it has been borrowed directly into some languages. So you'll hear that in Europe, you'll hear it in even Japan and other countries, they'll use bitch because there's something potent about invoking a word from another language. And of course, English is such a powerful language and the most used language in the world, and with billions of people who speak the language either as a first language or a second language. And so to invoke an English word could be very powerful. But then other languages too have their own versions of the word, whether it's literal, referring to a female dog, or whether it's an insult for a woman.
You know, in Korea, calling somebody kasige, which basically means puppy, is kind of an insult. I mean, not quite a bitch, but you know, a closer analogy might be son of a bitch. You know, kasige.
Right. Well, yeah. And again, that goes back to that idea of dog being such a long term insult. I think it's probably the most popular animal metaphor. I mean, we have lots of animal metaphors, some of them that describe men or used again, not necessarily solely for men, but are used toward men like snake or pig and dog as well. And And if we go back in time too, dog was used differently. A dog was for men versus women. So it was very gendered in the way it was used, that men who were dogs, and we have examples of this in Shakespeare as well, men who were dogs were weak and they were cowardly, whereas women who were dogs tended to be disloyal and disobedient. So you couldn't trust them, and perhaps they were disloyal in a sexual sense too. So they might have been adulterous.
Right.
But yeah, the dog and bitch are very, very old animal metaphors. And certainly we have lots of other ones out there that are used toward women, obviously like cow and,
Yeah.
Yeah, can't think of
True.
anything off the top of my head.
True.
Yes, shrew too, because, yeah, a lot of people, we know of that word from Shakespeare, and it was a contemporaneous insult too, but it just kind of fell by the wayside. But yeah, shrew mouse, I think a rodent, and particularly dangerous one for some animals. I think their bite can be quite venomous for some creatures, not humans, but frogs and other creatures.
Right. I mean, why would, I mean, dogs, I mean, dogs seem to be fairly useful animals. So how did dogs become kind of a very base insult for people?
Now that is a really good question, and just not a simple answer for that too. I
Right,
think you've
right.
got, as with lots of things in life, you have positive connotations and you've got negative connotations. So you, if we look at language, you have terms like man's best friend when you talk about a dog as being
Yeah.
loyal and by your side and a creature that protects you. And so you have all of these positive connotations of dogs, that they're lovable and they snuggle up with you and take care of you. And people talk about picking up animals from rescue places and saying, "Oh, I didn't rescue the dog. The dog rescued me and saved
Yeah.
my life." And so people have these, I know you've had a similar situation with
Yeah.
your little Ollie.
Yeah, I think I remember his name. Yeah, I mean, yeah, I mean, it's surprising how, because we've got cats, but yeah, a dog is something very different. I think I was never a dog person, but now I am. And but I
Me
mean,
too.
I mean,
I'm not a dog person. I'm a cat person. I'm
yeah.
staring at my cat right now.
Oh.
My husband has always been a dog person. Well, he's loved both.
Right.
And then we have our friend Blake,
Yes.
who loves dogs and really seemed to hate cats, and
That's
now
yeah.
has a cute little black kitty called Lucifer, Lucy.
Yeah.
And so I was astonished, and I think you and I both expressed surprise that
Yes.
here he is, seemingly this dog person who now has this cute little kitten, and he's all cooing over
Oh.
it. So yeah, I think you have positive connotations towards dogs, and then you have negative connotations too. So Shakespeare writes about dogs as being mangy and thieving, and I use in the book examples about dogs that mate on the streets, and
Yes, yeah.
stray dogs, and these ordinances against having your dog out in the street defecating and doing all kinds of things, getting up to no good. So you have these competing ideas of dogs being loyal and dogs being dirty and disgusting, and certainly the idea that dogs will mate with any dog that they can, and
Yes.
that's kind of put onto female dogs too, onto bitches, and yet that's not the case. They're quite selective, but the male dogs aren't, and
Well,
yet the female ones. This is my understanding. I am not a
right.
vet. I don't know
Yeah.
much
Well,
about
yeah.
behavior of dogs other than a kind of everyday understanding.
It checks out. I mean, I find that we got a male dog, right? Yeah, about 20% of dog ownership is trying to figure out what can we give the dog that he won't hump, basically. So,
Yeah, and my husband. Oh, he'll be in the doghouse. He has talked about that with me, because I thought, oh, this is what a disgusting, crass behavior of dogs. This is why I don't have a dog. They slobber and they hump everything. And he said, no, it's actually a kind of an expression of dominance. So it's it, or can be anyway, when it's used toward other dogs. So they're trying to express if there are a number of dogs in the household. Oh, and this is just one of the reasons that they do that they have this behavior, but it's to express that they're the alpha dog, they're the kingpin in the family. But I thought it was purely sexual, but no, that's apparently not the case. But yeah, you in terms of a bitch becoming an insult, I think that another reference is to the mother of dog. And Jeffrey Hughes, who's a linguist, has written about this and historically in a he's a, several books he's written about insults, and he talks about how you have this kind of motif of the dog, the female dog, that is protecting its young, and so it's snarling and growling and spitting and barking and biting, or threatening to do so. And so that's the bitch, the comparison to a woman who might behave in a similar way, who is scathing and snarling and nagging.
Okay. Oh, yeah, good point. Yeah, I guess I should, but in one of my original questions, yeah, what's so wrong with a female dog, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think again you've got the positive aspect of that she loves her puppies and protects them and is a great mother and a loving mother, and it's just such a sweet thing to see videos on Instagram of a mother and her pups. And but then on the other hand, what if they are threatened? What if they do feel fearful? How might they behave? How might they protect their litter? What might they do? And so I think there's probably that fear that if you go near a mother dog, that she's going to attack. And I think there's that metaphorical comparison to a woman, and maybe an unpredictable woman, a nasty, mean, nagging woman.
Right. I mean, I've seen a few TikToks where it's like, mama dogs and like the efforts they go to keep the father dog away from the puppies, you know? And
I'm not really familiar with that, but I can imagine.
it's cute, but I don't know if that is a normal trait of like, when mothers have like a litter of dogs that they try to. I mean, mostly it's wise to keep the father of any species away from the kid for, a few
Yeah.
years,
Ooh. Oh, for a few years, even in humans, hey. But yeah, certainly I think with other creatures, I'm thinking lions, if maybe the pups, the cubs are not their own, then they definitely pose a threat to the babies, to the young. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. So this book, I noticed you've been getting some like pretty good press. Like you were nominated for a Pulitzer Prize, right? I mean, you didn't win, but.
I was, and I was really surprised and very, very chuffed and very proud of that, and kind of forgot about it and then didn't really hear anything about it, and then subsequently discovered that I hadn't won. But and I think I would have heard, earlier had I really been shortlisted or anything like that. But I had seen the winners of this year's awards, and I mean, excellent books. I would like to think that as an academic work, Bitch fits in with that category of books, and I think it does in terms of scholarship. But on the surface of things, again, it is just such a provocative word, and I think I'd be hard pressed to imagine them announcing my book as a winner. And I'd like to think that I could break through, some of those stereotypes and concerns about the word, that this is a rigorous book in terms of research. But yeah, I think maybe it's a bit too early for that still, unfortunately.
Yeah, I feel like in the last year or so, there have been some books or songs or something with a rather graphic titles that that the media has had to sort of really kind of dance around, and I can't remember any, but
You're making me think of some too, and I off the top of my head I can't think of them, but ones that, you know, contain the F word and contain the S word, and they're becoming a lot more bold in that regard. And so I remember sending a bunch to my acquisitions editor and saying, look, this is a great time. Things are really ripe for a book like this to come out because people are using this word in public more, not necessarily indicative that the word's being used more in general, but there is just more openness about this in public use. And so, certainly, I for some time too have just been collecting photographs of brands, various things, whether it's coffee or other books that have the word bitch, maybe even just decals and bumper stickers on people's cars that have the word. So it really is, it's everywhere. But it certainly has that taboo. So it's such a strange dichotomy that the word is everywhere at once, a very common everyday word, and yet at the same time it's often censored as the B word, or it's bleeped out. But yeah, these are interesting times where the word is certainly on the increase, but at the same time, there's a lot of reluctance to use the word.
I mean, in the vein of like reclaiming the word as a positive, one of my friends, she I don't know if you call it a sewing circle, but she gets together with her friends. They call
Stitch and Bitch.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, Stitch and Bitch. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, sorry. I stole your thunder.
No. It's okay. I'm still uncomfortable saying the B word. So thank you for saying it. So
like happy hookers, and I do talk about that in the book. And so that has been around for quite some time. And just even women getting together over tea and just chattering and gossiping and bitching.
Right,
the word has been around a lot, but yeah, certainly we could talk about reclamation, reclaiming the word too.
I mean, it's definitely one of those words that can be used as a positive, but as a man, you might want to be very careful in using it as a positive with a woman. I feel like let women, stitch and bitch, or bitches and brews, or things like that. Mm-hmm. It don't necessarily. Well, women can use it. There's a lot of words that white men will invariably be like, well, they can use it, so why can't I use it? So
yeah, and I think that is a little. It's a tricky one, and I think you need to kind of weigh up the pros and cons, or the benefits versus the risks of using a word like that in public. And certainly if it's a husband and wife using the word at home, it might be okay behind closed doors, but if you're in public, you've got to be a bit more careful. And if you're talking about stitch and bitch as a thing but not in reference to women, then that's probably more acceptable too.
Yeah.
But often we use these terms like, bitch, or an insult term like stupid, and we think, oh, well, there's nothing wrong with that. I'm talking about an idea being stupid. But invariably you have a person that's behind this idea.
Mm-hmm.
So it often comes back to a person. So I think you've just got to be careful about the way that you use the word, especially the way that men use it, because it has this long history of violence against women and being used in a negative way, being used as a slur. And then it's used by gay men as well in a slightly different way amongst themselves, and then maybe with their women friends too. But, a word that I hear a lot, not as much now, but certainly during COVID, was Karen, my name. Yes. Being used as a slur, being used as an insult for a particular type of woman. So usually a white woman, maybe a middle-aged white woman who is very obnoxious and demanding, the kind of woman who wants to speak to the manager.
Yes.
And so that's been tricky for me because that's really caused this pederation, we call it, in linguistics. So the word becoming, the name becoming bad. And I think my name, I think by the time I had the name bestowed upon me, it was already kind of falling out of fashion.
Right.
And so it is certainly that Generation X kind of a name comes from, it was very popular during that time, but it's fallen out of favor for some time. And you've got other names too, like Becky and Susan, that are used similar insults. And the Karen and other names being used as insults has really interesting history. And I do delve into that in the book if people want to go and check that out as well. But certainly during COVID, it was really ramped up. I remember the woman who had seen someone walking their dog and reported them, and just other cases of women going into restaurants and starting fights and demanding to see the manager and being labeled a Karen.
Yeah.
And so at first I was kind of, you know, amused about it, and then it really became very popular and took hold very quickly. And so, you know, I tried to kind of be cool about it and just think, oh, well, you know, they're not talking about me. I'm not that kind of a person, am I?
Right.
But certainly as time's worn on, I've just seen the disturbing trend of it being used predominantly by men against women. And so what troubles me there is that, again, it's another word that is being used, wielded against women by men, another insult term where there is no real equivalent. So we look at bitch, and even though it's used against men, there is no real equivalent. It's just a mic drop when used against women. There's no equivalent for men. And I think a similar thing with Karen. People have said, oh, a male Karen, or a Ken, or a Chaz, or Chad, rather. Chad. All these other terms. It's like, well, they don't mean exactly the same thing. You can have these names, male names, that are used with it as insults, but there is no exact equivalent. And so it's just like another bullet for men to use against women, to call them a Karen. And so that's what concerns me, that it's really become a sexist term.
Yeah, I mean, a woman who is not keeping her head down, who is being assertive, right? It's a way to, it can be used as a cudgel, right?
Exactly. You know, and there are perfectly legitimate times where a woman can ask to speak to the manager or can complain about something.
Yeah,
and it's like I guess like the Tylenol thing. It's really taking away women's choices, taking away women's right to be able to do things. And if she does these things, then she's going to be labeled, and that's unfair when you consider beyond the stereotype.
Yeah. I mean, there's a weird intersection of calling out, say, privilege, but, you know, you're focusing way too much on calling out a white woman's privilege versus, you know, a white man's privilege. And, you know, again, coming back to the bitch versus curmudgeon, right? You know, or the man is just demanding what is due and good service.
His entitlement, that's his right and his privilege. Whereas for a woman, you should maintain the status quo and not, as you said, raise your head and be noticed or be seen to do that, because you're behaving like a man.
Exactly. It's sort of, you know, there was a, like you say, as you're saying, you know, around COVID, there was a very, very specific use for it, but it, you know, it has generalized to, you know, be beyond, you know, sort of someone who's, you know, doesn't really recognize, you know, their privilege. And it's like, look, you know, because, you know, you ordered 8-piece nuggets and you got 7, you know, that is not the end of the world, you know, like, you know, that kind of thing. Whereas, you know, now again, you know, it can be generalized too. It's like, hey, instead of throwing your paper coffee cup on the ground, there's just like a garbage can, like, you know, 5 steps away, why don't you put it there? Oh, shut up, Karen. You know what I mean? Like,
it's being used in a way for illegitimate uses in that regard, and just being wielded against women for anything. And rather like bitch And at that point, it's unfair and it's an attack. That's I think a particularly since it is my name, it's a trickier one for me. And you know, I certainly feel if there's ever a time where I need to complain about something, I feel a little chastened that if I sign off on an email with the name Karen, that I'm going to be pigeonholed
I mean,
as a type of woman.
that you called me out on using it on something I wrote, and I quickly edited it. I'm like, yeah, you're right. I like there's a better way to describe this person, you know. And so I rewrote it. And then I think my latest book I was kind of writing, and then I think I was gonna use the word Karen, but I'm like, nope. So yes,
Well,
yeah. Thank you.
I think it's good to think about these things, these words, and the way that they're used, and the connotations and the baggage that they have. And again, you're free to use these words, but I think it's always a good thing to analyze our usage and decide, you know, what we want to say, how we want to express it, and the ways that words that we use that we think might be leveraged against someone else might really say more about us. And I think that's a big thing with a word like bitch. It often says more about the person who's using the word than the person that it's leveled against.
Now, I mean, you know, you have said that the word itself, bitch, has been used by other cultures, that, you know, using an English swear word can be quite jarring. Exactly. But have other cultures independently for a, like, I know dog is in itself, but like a, like the female dog, have other cultures independently come up with the female? No, I mean, not all cultures will have a name for a female dog, but.
So a lot of cultures do. We call it a gloss or kind of a translation, that other languages will, like la chienne in French, and is it a perra in Spanish? But I'm giving a French accent there. So you have these terms that might not necessarily be insults; they're just literal. So you're saying, you know, if you in French, if you called someone a female dog in French, then they're, you know, la chienne. They would look at you as in, what are you talking about? You're saying, I'm literally a female dog. That doesn't make sense. Where I think it's salope, is the equivalent for bitch, and so it means more than, it doesn't mean female dog. It means a woman who is annoying or nagging or malicious, malevolent. So all of the things that bitch means to us. And often what I found in looking at other languages was that bitch had a lot of similarities in other languages with its earlier use, talking about a whore or a harlot or a slut. So in African languages and in Asian languages, you had bitch was also, it did double duty, I guess you could say, that it meant a bitch, an annoying woman of some kind, but it also meant a woman who was a slut or a whore. So it could mean, have these double meanings or multiple meanings, but just a bad woman of some description.
Okay. All right. Well, we should wrap it up. You've hinted you're working on something new.
Yes, I'm working on a couple of books. I'm at the moment going through copy editing for a new book called Beyond Words: How We Learn, Use, and Lose Language. So it's an area of linguistics called psycholinguistics, which is the intersection of psychology and linguistics. So it's looking at things like what is language? Answering that question. And it's not a simple question or a simple answer again. And how did language emerge? And how do we acquire language as babies? And how do we acquire second languages? And then how do we lose language for people who develop dementia or Alzheimer's, or who have a stroke and lose language in some way? And another book I'm working on now too is called Women versus Women, and it's about internalized sexism and misogyny. So it's a good follow-on from Bitch.
I mean, long time ago, encountered this kind of linguistic pseudoscience, the idea that I mean, obviously our language can shape a lot of the ways we think about things, but you know, there are some languages where the verb comes first, right? And you know, you have verb, then subject, then object, and Korean's an example, and I think Latin is another example. So, but you know, the idea that, you know, cultures that put the verb first are very, you know, fast cultures, go, 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 you know, take, kind of like, and I'm like,
well, I think those are assumptions that we have. So yes. You're right. We have in English subject, verb, object. And so in other languages, they have other versions of that. So you can have any combination, and some are more rare than others unless used. And, you know, I do illustrate that in the book with She Loves You, the Beatles song, because getting into syntax and grammar, for some people, can be a drag. So I've really tried to make it accessible for the general public. So in talking about things like that, but yeah, I do go into perceptions of languages and perceptions of accents and stereotypes that are associated with German as being this tough and a language of order and being an ugly language, as opposed to French being a beautiful, sexy, romantic language. So we have all of these associations and ideas about other languages and about ourselves too.
Yes.
And you know, even within English too, whether we're talking about standard English versus non-standard English, and you know, whose standard is that anyway? So, I mean, these are big debates, and I do delve into all of those in the book. There's a lot to say about them.
Oh, one little anecdote. My my in-laws, when they're living with us, they're away for a while, but the way my mother-in-law, she's Filipino, so the way she says beach and bitch, exactly the same. So we're at the dinner table, and she's talking about a beach hotel, but she keeps saying bitch hotel. Now you can imagine my 12-year-old daughter.
Oh,
this is like the most glorious moment ever at a dinner table. Her grandmother talking about a bitch hotel.
Oh yes, and yeah, there's a lot of fun in that. I think with t-shirts and you know, and memorabilia and souvenirs and things like that. And I had a Serbian friend years ago, and he said, I wasn't sure if he said bitch or beach, and I said, well, what did you say? And he said bitches. I like them both. So,
I mean, French people, when saying, you know, in English, trying to say beach, you got to listen close. And let's not even go like some languages, how they mispronounce the word Coke. So,
yeah. Again, that's that context is everything.
Yeah. All right. So, I did mention, you are a co-host of Monster Talk, a very long running podcast on monsters.
Yeah, so completely different topic, but I guess monstrous people.
Yeah, exactly. And that seemed to be on a little bit of a hiatus, but you're roaring back. Season 5, I think.
Yeah, we used to be on a format of whenever Blake had time to produce an episode that we'd recorded some time ago, but now we're on a weekly format. So you are going to have to come back on the show. And,
I would love to. I will say, because the one time I was on, that was a lot of fun. I think that month I must have sold 8 or 9 books because I talked about my book.
Oh, and I love it.
Yeah, and I'm like, I think I even messaged you guys, and I'm like,
I think
I sold 8 books. Can I send you some money? Because usually I sell like 1 or 2 a month, but you know, like you literally quadrupled my sales. So,
That's fantastic. That's what we aim for, push some paper and push some books, as Blake says. But you have to think of an investigation or something you're working on, any kind of research, and come back on the show soon.
Well, I am coming out with my Skeptic's Book of Lists too, so I'm sure there is some
fantastic
list. There is some list in there that probably be quite applicable to cryptids and things like that.
Right. Well, there we go. There's an episode, so we'll be in touch.
Oh, you know what is working out? The history of the demons and devils from the Monster Manual. Now I know you have talked about the Monster Manual and the origin of the monsters, but never quite specific as the history of the demons and devils. That might be something kind of fun to talk about. It's very
Absolutely. And, you know, even if we've talked about something, there's always more to say. We're all always finding out more. So there's always value in that.
All right. Okay. I do appreciate the vote of confidence. Thank you, Kira.
Oh, you deserve it. Thank you so much for having me back on the show. It's always a pleasure to talk with you.
Great. Okay. Have a good night there. Well, or day, afternoon.
Yeah. Well, what time is it then out? You're on?
Yeah. So I'm approaching 6 p.m. So.
So you're on ET?
Yeah, yes, exactly. So usually.
Oh, okay. For some reason, I thought you were on CT or MT.
Yeah. I still work from home, but my wife goes into the office a few days a week. And I got up on the iPhone now, and we all have each other on, you know, find each other. And so, I can see my wife, you know, her coming home, and then I can sort of time it like, okay, she's about half hour out. So I'm going to start to mop the floors.
You are a good husband.
Well, no, I would mop the floors, but it's the timing that makes me a skeeve. So just as she's coming in, she can see me just putting down that mop and like, hey, hon.
Looks like you've been working hard all day, huh?
Exactly. Yeah.
Great. And when will this come out? I'll be sure to promote it on social media.
Sure. Yeah, give me about a week or so. So
No worries. And I meant it. We definitely want to have you coming back on the show. So when do you think might be a good time? Is October kind of busy? It's busy for us. Yeah. We've got a live show coming out. So I don't know if November might work better for you, but we'll have to keep in touch about that.
The old time, November's great. Obviously, as we get closer to Halloween, you know, things get a little crazy. But
they do. When's the book coming out?
I'm just in the editing part where, you know, I've finished it. Now I'm going to read it over. I'm self-published, so I give it one read. I do everything in first. I compose in Google Docs, and then I give it a read over. And then it's on my phone. So what if I'm waiting for a blood test or something, I pull it up and I do some copy editing. And so I'm always editing. But so, then I'm going to flow it into Word, get it sort of set up. And then, I do another read through and then I submit it to KDP. And then I get my author's copy. And then I do another read through, like, you know, pen and paper or, you know, pen and mark things and stuff like that. So, yeah, it's a long process. So it's not going to be, unfortunately, available for Christmas. Makes a perfect Christmas gift. But,
we can delve into just one aspect of the book, or as you said, the demon aspect or something else that you're working on. But editing, I know for a fact, can take longer than writing the book. certainly if it's in the hands of someone else, a publisher. Sometimes I've had to wait a year for a book to be edited and then preparation for marketing and promotion, and then they still do nothing.
Yeah, exactly. All right, then. Well, I'll let you go. All right. Have a good day, Karen. All right.
Thank you so much. Good to chat with you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.